Tuesday to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe alongside. Willie Donnick will join us in the next hour. Sorry about the technical difficulties at the beginning. We're having a little trouble at the first, but we're here. We're ready. We're ready to get rocking and rolling. We got a great show in store for you. We'll talk a little bit NFL draft in about 10-15 minutes. David Poyle will stop by for his weekly chat with us in the second hour. We're going to cover some hockey in the final hour with the trading deadline less than a week away.
It's almost here.
And at noon, we're going to head down to Daytona and talk about what we're going to discuss right here. I don't know how many people were watching the end of the Daytona 500. I was, you were, and it was the second closest finish ever. And the minute the wreck happened, and by the way, there were a lot of wrecks towards the end, which what happens. Yeah, that's what usually happens in Daytona, especially at the Daytona 500 to kick off the race season. Ryan Newman's in the lead and loses control or gets spun out. I don't know who's if there was anybody to blame, but obviously he gets touched by
Ryan Blaney
in the 12 car, and he takes a sharp right into the wall, goes upside down in the air, comes down, boom, gets hit by another car, flipped over, and just sliding down the track into the infield on fire, and
landed on the driver's side window.
Yeah, I immediately said, that is not good. Yeah. Like, I know these cars are way, way safer today than 15, 20 years ago.
Well,
the last big, bad incident we had in Daytona, which has been almost two decades ago, hard to believe, that these cars are completely different. It is great for the drivers. The safety precautions today are fantastic. But I still, with that being said, knew. I just said out loud, ruh-roh, that is not good for Ryan Newman. That is really, really bad. And the fact that on the broadcast, they were saying nothing. They were rarely showing anything.
Jeff Gordon looked ghost white.
And I was like, man, this is not a good scene at Daytona.
Well, drivers know. You know, it's just they have that sixth sense. They know. And so, look, not to make the comparison, but it was the 20th season of NASCAR on Fox. We all know what happened the first race. It was at Daytona. And Jeff Gordon's reaction was very similar to that of Darrell Waltrip's. When Darrell Waltrip was obviously excited for his brother to win the race in 2001, but he immediately said, I hope Dale's okay. What's up with Dale? Is Dale okay? And you had the interviews with Ryan Blaney, who was just completely shaken up that, you know, he's thinking what just happened. And Corey LaJoie, who was the driver that hit Newman right in the driver's side door, they were both just very, very shaken up. It reminded me of Kenny Schrader. So there was a lot of that, and they weren't seeing anything. And so you have that happen, and then you have Denny Hamlin, Joe Gibbs Racing. They start celebrating because they have no idea. They know a wreck happened. But, again, like you said, the cars have come such a long way. Usually, you know, you see a wreck and they pop right out. Now, a few years ago, Kyle Busch was in a bad one in the Xfinity race, broke his leg, missed half the season. You've had those, Eric Almirola.
We were there.
Yeah, when we were there, right.
We were there when that happened. That was on Saturday.
Yep, we were down there. So that happened, and then you had Eric Almirola has gotten beat up. I mean, look, guys get hurt. It's a dangerous sport. But these cars, I mean, I hate to say it this way, but if that had happened 20 years ago, Ryan Newman's probably not here. So, it's just they have come such a long way with safety. And I saw some people tweeting, Twitter was a dangerous place last night because you had some people that were talking about things they didn't know about and, you know, the sport. And, look, they have put a lot. I heard Mike Joy do an interview. He's the voice of NASCAR on Fox. Heard him do an interview on SiriusXM, and he said that 20 years ago, unfortunately, it took Dale Earnhardt dying for NASCAR, for everybody to realize that safety's not up to just the driver. It's up to everybody. And so they got their stuff together, and they made the car safer, and they made the helmet safer. They put soft walls in. I mean, they did all these things to make the sport safer. But
Hans
it's not
device,
Hans device. I mean, it's not bulletproof, though. I mean, it you know, it's a dangerous sport. They're going 200 miles an hour, just and that's the risk. But Roush Fenway Racing, NASCAR, released a statement last night. Ryan Newman is being treated at Halifax Medical Center. He is in serious condition, but doctors have indicated his injuries are non-life-threatening. We appreciate your thoughts and prayers and ask that you respect the privacy of Ryan and his family during this time. We appreciate your patience and cooperation, and we will provide more information as it becomes available. There's nothing that's come out today, so there has not been any type of update this morning on his condition. Jamie Little was down there in the middle of everything, so we will talk to her at noon.
She's the one who interviewed Denny Hamlin.
Yes. So
he got out of the car.
So we will do that. And look, it was such a fluid situation, and you know, for Denny Hamlin and Joe Gibbs and Denny Hamlin's spotter to apologize on Twitter because they were getting blasted about celebrating. Guys, they didn't know. And as soon as they found out, that's when things slowed down. So, you know, and the first thing that was coming out of Denny's mouth was, I hope Ryan's okay. Everybody's praying for Ryan, making sure Ryan's okay. So let's just not be so quick to judge sometimes. You know, let's just take a step back. But it was a very, very scary situation, and he's got a fight ahead of him. I think, you know, we don't know exactly how serious it is, but you know, it definitely could have been a lot worse, and I was scared. I was scared to death that it was going to be bad. But
look, I agree with you on the Denny Hamlin stuff, and I know Denny Hamlin came out on Twitter and was like, you know, gave his side of the story, and I agree, and I believe what he said. I do. You know, he said, look, you know, I unhooked all communications. I'm in celebration mode. I didn't have a clue what was going on. But I will say this. Drivers know stuff better than anybody else. Denny Hamlin's been through all the battles of the track battles and what goes on, especially at these large tracks like Daytona. I will admit that his interview with Jamie Little, I said out loud, I was a little surprised. He didn't say a little bit more about the crash and a little bit more about the incident. I mean, these guys know that you see that happen. I mean, he saw him dart right in front of him. I mean, by the way, he was really lucky he wasn't involved in it.
Yeah.
Really lucky. They have mirrors. You know, they can see what's behind them.
No, they can.
He can absolutely. When you see them showing in the car that he was looking behind the whole time, they absolutely can. They know what's back there. They were showing the graphic when he was in the lead. He's sitting there just staring at what's behind him. He's not staring even. He's barely looking in front of him. He's looking at what's behind him in the mirror. They know what's going on. You could see a car bouncing around behind you. I was a little surprised that he didn't address it more. If I'm just being totally honest, Yes, I believe his story. I believe that he really didn't understand. But I'm saying when the interview happened, I was surprised he didn't talk about it a little bit more. That's all. Yeah. I blurted that out loud. Like, wow, he kind of glossed over that pretty quick.
Now, let me play devil's advocate for a second. If he didn't know all the information, isn't it best that he not really talk about it? Because he did bring up, like, he knew there was a wreck.
He has to know information. Drivers know better than anybody. You think you have a grasp of what a wreck really is on a track over a guy who's in it? No. You have no clue.
No.
And I don't either. But they do. They see it every week.
Right.
They've been through it.
Sure, Denny's been in them.
You don't think when that whole thing happened, you don't think he has an idea in his head? Because he does that every single week for how many years now in the sport that he didn't have a clue? Like, rut-row, like all of us, like, woo, that's bad. Wow, that was bad. I hope that's – I mean, that looked real. I just thought I would see a little bit more emotion out of him, like, ooh, I hope Ryan's okay because that was scary.
Well, and you know what? I honestly think because it's what I thought. You know, now I saw it on TV and I knew it was bad, but we're so used to now that, oh man, that's a bad wreck, and then they pop out and they get out of the car. And so I kind of just wonder if there's...
Yeah, but I didn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I
do that all the time, and I didn't do that on this one. I literally blurted out, "Oh, that's bad.
Yeah,
that's really bad. That is not." There's bad wrecks all the time, and I'm like, you know, I don't have that feeling. Yeah. I don't say that out loud.
I don't know. I don't know what was going through Denny's mind at that point, but you know, you make a good point.
I
mean, it's an interesting observation, but you know, like I said, look, hopefully there's an update today on his condition and how he is. You know, he's been through. His daughters were there when they were at the track, and a lot of times they are. And he, ironically, a few days ago, he and his wife Chrissy actually had a joint statement announcing they were separating. Had a good relationship, you know, going to raise their daughters together, but I don't believe Chrissy Newman was at Daytona. I don't know that for sure, but that was kind of the indication that his daughters were, but she was not. So I just, you know, obviously thoughts with his family.
We will come back and switch gears. We'll talk to Dan Shanka, OurLads.com. We'll talk about the NFL draft. Yeah, the combine's at the end of the month, free agency cranks up, and it is going to be green light go to the draft. And unfortunately, it will not be in our fine city this year like it was last year. We will come back more with Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this rainy Tuesday. Hope everybody's having a good day thus far. We're live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Predators and Hurricanes tonight here at Bridgestone Arena. 7 o'clock puck drop-off pregame for you. Starting at 6. No stranger to the show, Dan Shanka is on the line with us. He has been in those NFL war rooms. Now you can find his work, and he's been here for a long time doing great work at Our Lads Scouting Service. OurLads.com is where you can find the website. Dan Shanka is on the line. Dan, how you doing?
Doing real good, guys. Darren, it's always a pleasure. Like I said, pretty soon, I think I'll be getting a gold watch from the station there. We've been on there a long time.
I think that is in order. I think that's a good point. I'll work on that. When you look at we haven't got to the Underwear Olympics yet in Indianapolis. That's coming up at the end of the month. You know, when you see how free agency shakes out and see what some of the teams did, some of the movement, what positions they addressed, and as we inch a little bit closer to the draft, just not getting into specifics yet at the beginning of this interview, Dan, let's just talk about positions of strength. So right now you're in the war room, and you're talking about positions of need on your club and positions of strength in this draft. Give us a couple of positions of strength, in your opinion, where teams can get a whole lot better at that position through this draft.
Well, I'll tell you what, Darren, the obvious, and I don't want to be singing to the choir here, but the wide receiver position might be the strongest that, you know, I've seen since I've been scouting, and that's been 1988. So,
wow.
You got big ones, fast ones, strong ones, multi-level receivers, guys that can, you know, the smaller guys that are really fast take that ball, get up the field, and they're off to the races. So you got the big, powerful guy, Juwan Johnson, for instance, from Oregon. You know, here's a 6'4", 230-pound receiver. He's got feet like a little slot guy, you know. And you've got a lot of people probably never even heard of him. So obviously the Judys of the world and Ruggs, everybody's heard of those guys, Higgins. You know, those big, strong, Lamb, you know, everybody's heard of those speed guys that can catch and run with it. But after that, there's a whole bunch of good wide receivers out there.
Titans were able to do that in the second round with A.J. Brown last year, and everybody feels pretty good after his rookie campaign that they have struck gold with a guy like A.J. Brown. Is that kind of what you're getting at? Because, you know, previous years they went up there and they took Corey Davis – 5th overall. He's been nice. He's been solid. I don't think anybody would say he was worthy of the 5th pick overall that high in the first round. Maybe things change. I don't know. I tend to think that this is what he is. But you're saying after those big guys that you named, the guys from Alabama and Oklahoma and Clemson, those guys, you can still get healthy at that position in rounds 2 through 7?
Absolutely. You know, I think Justin Jefferson, their LSU, I mean, they probably, when Joe Burrow goes to Cincinnati, he's going to look around and say, hey, where's all my receivers? You know, especially if Green isn't there, you know, and because I'll guarantee you that every one of those receivers at LSU, nine of them, and only one or two of them are seniors, are going to be on NFL rosters in the years to come. But Justin Jefferson's another one. Hamler, the speed receiver from Penn State, a slot guy, a terrific receiver, but he's injured a lot. And I know a lot of mock drafts have him in the first round and all that. But Laviska Shenault from Colorado, to me, I'd lay off him because he's been hurt a lot at Colorado. When he's not hurt, he makes great plays. But, you know, we'll take him on second contract. But, I mean, Rager, or Jalen Rager from TCU, another speed guy that, I mean, Pittman from Southern Cal. I mean, you can go right on down the line. Colin Johnson from Texas. Van Jefferson from Florida. Prochet from SMU. I mean, gosh, there's guys all through this that are good return guys too. So, in fact, I would be really shocked if there's not, I mean, usually you get 32 to 33 drafted every year. And, be honest with you, if 40 receivers didn't get drafted, I would be surprised.
Wow. And as we know, I mean, I know all positions are tough. As you know, it's an inexact science in that room, but I feel like wide receivers are particularly tough. Like, you know, those numbers you just threw out there that get drafted every year, I mean, I'd love to see the analytics on how many really make it, you know?
Right. Well, I'll tell you, you'll see some years where, you know, you'll three receivers or four receivers will go in the first round and none of them play till their second or third year.
Yeah.
You know, other years they'll get in there. And I think now with the progression of, I mean, everything kind of starts at the high school level, you know, and the NFL plays with what's there. And so you've got all those camps out there that the 7-on-7 camps, these guys improve their hands. Then the next level, all the spread that's going on, the spread formations, the receivers, you got four wideouts. Now the NFL, your base formation basically is your three wideouts. So, you know, receivers are getting bigger, faster, and they're getting better because they're catching more balls. So I think that this particular group ought to be outstanding, and it will help teams get better.
Dan, the Titans also need a guy who can get to the quarterback. They need a pass rusher. How's that department look going into this draft?
Well, I think some, you know, obviously the, you know, Chase Young is going to be the big dog up there and a guy that can really get after quarterbacks, but he's going to be long gone when the Titans pick. In fact, I would doubt very much be past number two, because somebody's going to want to trade up there. If the Redskins don't want him, they'll somebody else is going to get him. But I think that I think a lot of these pass rushers are going to have to be schemed open. Like the Espinoza kid from Iowa. See, he's a power guy, basically I would say a left end in a four-man front, or he could be a three-man front guy, but he's not a big-time pass rusher. Now, Gross Matos from Penn State, he's raw, but he's probably going to be there. You know, the Titans are going to look at him really close. I think he can be there. He's had flashes where he looks absolutely outstanding, but you know, he's a raw guy. I mean, he's got the length you want. He's got the really that first step speed. So he is going to be there, I think, for the Titans if they, you know, want him at their pick. So I think that, you know, 29, I think that could be their guy.
Dan Shanka is with us, ourlads.com. And you know, I think a lot of people are going to be watching the Cincinnati Bengals when they hold up a Burrow jersey, because I think that one's pretty much written in ink that he's going to go first overall. But I look at so many mocks, and I get obsessed with it sometime, and I've seen as many as four quarterbacks taken in the first round. When you evaluate these quarterbacks, Dan, do you think that some teams would be reaching, or do you really like this QB class?
No, there's no question there's going to be reaching. In fact, You think this was a Wisconsin cheese factory? There's so many holes in their Swiss cheese and stuff. So, I mean, it really. I mean, even Tua. I mean, I'm not so sure. If I'm not, I'm sitting in a room right now. I mean, it depends. You know what the doctors say, but I might have him on the sideboard, which means you wouldn't take him until a certain position in the draft, or hey, go after him on a second contract because. He's been beat up already, and if you're beat up before you get in the NFL, it's, you know, not promising when you get in the NFL. So, I mean, there's really Burrow is probably the only clean guy there of all the quarterbacks. I mean, there's just, you know, it bothers me the way, I mean, I evaluate quarterbacks, too, is they process information quickly. And, you know, I don't think you see that, you know, in Herbert, for instance. I think that he's a very smart guy in the classroom, all that stuff. But the synapse from his brain to his hand to get that ball out, that's a whole different story. And but he's a big athlete. He did some good things at the Senior Bowl. But I think that, you know, either he's going to come on and the light's really going to come on for him, or he's just going to be a very serviceable, you know, take a snap and get you out of games and all that. He'll be a starting quarterback, but not an elite guy. I tell you, Love from Utah State scares me to death. I mean, I wouldn't touch him, you know, until the second round. I mean, everybody makes excuses for the guy, saying, well, he lost to some offensive linemen, he lost some of his receivers, you know, and he didn't have much of a running game, but it still doesn't excuse him for, you know, throwing, what, 14 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, and throwing the ball over, you know, wide-open receivers' heads, which he did at the Senior Bowl. You know, I mean, he did that there, too. So, I mean, guys like that never change. I mean, we see, you know, what happened to Winston there at Tampa Bay. I mean, he was a turnover machine. And I think when I was on your show, when, you know, he came out, I said that. This guy, I mean, he's going to do the same thing when he gets to the NFL. Now, if you want to put up with that, that's up to you. But, and he set, what, a record this year. I think he had, what, as many interceptions as he did touchdown passes. So, no, this group, guys, really scares me at quarterback. And maybe one, you know, somebody in the middle will come on. But right now, this except for Burrow, I would be very leery.
I've looked at some mocks, and, you know, the Titans obviously pick at 29. And most people have them going pass rush, going edge. But then I've seen a couple that have DeAndre Swift from Georgia, and I just scratch my head on that because I don't know if they're scared that Derrick Henry's just not going to resign, but I don't see them spending a first-round pick on a backup running back. What do you think about Swift, and what do you think about Swift and the Titans?
Well, I tell you, Swift is really a good running back, and we like Dobbins a little better. I think, you know, both those guys are complete backs. I think with Dobbins and Swift, they – catch the ball okay out of the backfield. They'll block. They'll stick their nose in there. They're tough guys. Dobbins probably in the open field doesn't quite have maybe the shiftiness that Swift does, but I think Dobbins might hold up a little better. They're both, you know, similar in size. Dobbins has just had a tremendous, you know, year this year and every year at Ohio State. He, you know, sophomore year, his freshman year, he's had outstanding seasons. I think Swift is played in a rotation there, whereas Dobbins, you know, is a bell cow. So you might say, well, he had more, you know, he's got more tread worn off the tire than Swift does. But I don't think I would touch a running back, though. I mean, I've got two guys that I have late in the first round, but I think there's enough good backs that you could take a guy in the second or third round and get what you wanted out of them. And, you know, we'll see if Henry signs or not. But I think that for the system and things like that, I don't think you got to take a guy like that in the first round. I think, you know, your better value may end up being the pass rusher.
Dan, what do you think about Keyshawn Vaughn out of Vanderbilt?
Really good running back. I think that he's going to be a good serviceable guy. I think he's probably going to be a third or fourth round running back. Got great running instincts, vision. Again, there's one of those kind of guys that you bring him in, say Henry signed, bring him in as a rotational guy. I think he'd be a good fit.
Does Iowa have two or three tight ends that are coming out this year? Like some big tight end you?
No, they don't. But I'll tell you, actually this year you got mostly kind of middle round guys. Komet from Notre Dame is our top guy. Good, strong tight end, knows how to block, set the edge. I think that a ton of juniors came out this year at the tight end group. But I think that, you know, there's going to be some big – in fact, if you look through the NFL, you'll see a lot of these guys that are either free agents or taken late. But, I mean, I like Jared Pinkney, right after Komet. I think that – and some people might have Pinkney graded ahead. He just – you know, he was blocking more this year because they didn't have anybody protect the quarterback, and so they had to hold him in. But Jared Pinkney, I think, is going to eventually be a Pro Bowl tight end. You know, Komet, I got, and Pinkney's in there. Hopkins, and there's another, that familiar name of the Titans fans, Bryson Hopkins, with his father playing for years for Houston. And that, but anyway, I think Bryson Hopkins is one of those guys that's probably going to be taking third, fourth round and end up being an eventual starter. But a couple of good local guys there.
Wow, good stuff as always. You know, when it's this time of year, you're going to hear Dan Shanka on our show. Dan, always good to talk to you. Look forward to talking to you real soon. Thanks for doing this.
You bet, you guys. Thank you.
That is Dan Shanka, Our Lads Scouting Service. OurLads.com is where you can find his work. He's been at this for four decades. He knows what he's talking about. We will come back more of Darren Donick and Chase on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, tomorrow, Preds fans, Smashville Live. We'll have Ryan out. Well, nope.
We just updated that.
Nope.
You got the old one. We'll get you the new one.
Austin Watson and?
Yes.
Okay. Tomorrow at Cool Springs Brewhouse South, located at 1855 Galleria Boulevard. That's from 7 until 8 o'clock. That's tomorrow night, 7 to 8, Smashville Live, Brewhouse South, 1855 Galleria Boulevard. That's on the back end of Cool Springs Galleria, if you're familiar with the mall area. And tomorrow night, Smashville Live is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Yeehaw Brewing Company, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. Good work by Dan Shanka from Our Lads Scouting Service. As always, you know, anytime you say anything bad about Jordan Love, that there will be a radar in Teron Davenport's house, and it will go off, just kind of like a tornado warning signal. And if you are saying bad things about Jordan Love, that siren will go off in the Davenport house, and he will immediately pick up the bat phone and call. He has done that right now. TD, what's up?
What's going on? I think you kind of misphrasing this thing. I mean, I do like Jordan Love as a prospect, but I'm not going to say he's immune from criticism.
No, you love Love.
I see what you did there. That's good.
You don't like Love. You love Love. Do you not?
Love
has read the room.
He's an outstanding prospect, and I think the problem with a lot of the takes on him, I think it's just a matter of – I just find it interesting that these same things that apply to Love don't apply to a guy like a Josh Allen, who for his career at Wyoming had inconsistent accuracy and had high turnovers. You could turn on the championship game where he threw two interceptions. You just watched DeMonte Casey's a highlight reel, and it's littered with interceptions of Josh Allen. I just think that we need to balance the way that we look at all of these prospects. Jordan Love, of course, he had the interceptions last year, but there are definite reasons for them. I've watched all of his games. There were some throws, admittedly, and I've put the video on Twitter, you know, where it's just, all right, son, you can't make that throw. I don't know what you were seeing, but there's no way that you missed that linebacker, and he stepped in the passing lane and picked it off. But then there are other throws where he makes outstanding reads, where he extends the pocket, extends the play, escapes the pocket, and makes a play down the field. It's happened multiple times. So I think with Jordan Love, you have to look at the full body of pitcher. I think too oftentimes you get caught up in looking at last year, but you have to also look at the previous year. And I think when you look at the two combined, he is a prospect that is definitely a first-round potential.
In all seriousness, I was just having fun. I have no idea why you called in. You're always welcome to call in. But what, obviously something you wanted to weigh in on, something you heard in that interview. So I'll just kind of turn it over to you.
Well, no, I wanted to talk about the running backs a little
bit
and also the pass rushers, because I think when you look at the running back group, I think there is a drop-off from your guys. I think the top two are J.K. Dobbins and DeAndre Swift. It's no secret. You know, I've spoken about Swift for quite some time now. I watched the kid in high school, so definitely, you know, very positive on him. And I think after those two guys, there is a drop-off. And a lot of people will mention Jonathan Taylor, but, you know, you have the fumble issues with him. He is a back that definitely ran for a lot of yards. But I think a first-round pick on Swift would not be a bad idea, you know, especially if somehow Derrick Henry is not retained. But I think he's definitely a first-round talent. But then you go from there, and the next group of guys I think is definitely, you know, a different tier. And, you know, where you're talking about Cam Akers, you know, you're talking about Keyshawn Vaughn, which, Chase, you mentioned. I think there is a difference. You know, you talk about Zach Moss or some of these other guys. There's definitely a difference. So when you look at the two tiers, you know, I think there's more of a drop-off from the top tier of running back to the second tier of running back than there is edge rusher. And, you know, you look at some of these guys, whether it's Bradley Anae, Josh Uche, these are names that I've mentioned. You know, Zach Bond, you know, there are a bunch of guys, Marlon Davidson, that you could get in the second round that will give you similar production to what you would get at 29 if you were to pick an edge rusher.
Teron Davenport, ESPN, is with us. And, you know, one thing you and I have talked about back on Chase and TD and then, you know, when you've been coming on the show, since we know the Titans are going to pick at 29, is I look at that position as – best player available that fits the needs that you have. And I think a need of this team that maybe we're not talking about enough is going to be the secondary, because who knows what's going to happen at corner with Logan Ryan. I mean, he's most likely not coming back. Malcolm Butler is going to be making a lot of money. You expect him to come back, but I think that's a position they have to look at. So are there some corners that you like that you would spend that first-round pick on at 29?
Yeah, I mean, two that jump off right off the bat, you know, you got Trayvon Diggs, Stephon Diggs, his younger brother. And I could see him being there at 29, and if he is, that's a guy they should absolutely jump on. You also have a guy in Christian Fulton out of LSU, you know, he's a player, you know, and he brings size. Just like Diggs, he brings size and length to the position and athleticism. So, I mean, those are two guys. I mean, you could mention a Jeff Gladney. Another one that is really good down there in TCU. You know, he's another corner, very athletic. He's someone that could turn and run with some of these speedy guys. So that's someone. And obviously, if you don't go corner in the first round, you could come back in the second round. And I've mentioned his name over and over again. I watched three of his games yesterday. One against Oklahoma, which was from 2018. And this is, again, why you have to go back further than last year. I watched him go against Marquise Brown. I watched him go against Arizona State with N'Keal Harry. And then I watched him go against Stanford with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. And that's Darnay Holmes. And that kid right there, he can legitimately fly. And I watched him stick with Marquise Brown from the slot position, right, on a post, and he broke it up. I watched him turn and run with him, a beautiful baseball turn. He was kind of beat at the line of scrimmage, but he turned and ran with Brown down the field and picked the ball off. And this was Kyler Murray throwing the football. Then I watched him guard N'Keal Harry, as I said, and this is a bigger 6'4", 200-plus-pound receiver, but he wouldn't let him body him up on the slant, and he drove on the ball and picked it off and took it back 30 yards for a touchdown. And then you look at going against Arcega-Whiteside, one of the best deep threats. You know, he turned and ran with him, perfectly angled him towards the sideline to eliminate that cushion, went up and broke up the pass. And in that game, he had a kick return. It was that game. So, I mean, this kid is a legit player. You know, he's someone you could get in the second round that'll give you what you need as a nickel guy.
Have you watched the XFL at all? Have you been able to check it out in
the first
couple of weeks?
Yeah.
How much?
I have. I actually – go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how much do you think GMs are evaluating talent right now? Because I've seen some guys that are interesting to me.
Oh, yeah. I rest assured they're definitely evaluating talent. A lot of the guys from the AAFL, you know, they ended up on rosters or in camps. You know, so they're definitely evaluating. I mean, look, Logan Woodside, he is the guy that they, you know, the Titans brought back. So I think the good GMs, the ones that, you know, don't leave any stones unturned, like a John Robinson, you know, these guys that add these really good undrafted free agents or just free agents overall, like a Khalif Raymond, you know, or even do well at the back end of the draft. I think those are the guys that you'll see, you know, bringing in someone from the XFL. Phillip Walker, right? D-Mac, I text you a sidearm throw that he made for a touchdown. I mean, this kid is going to be in a camp, and I think he's a legitimate backup quarterback, if not competing for a starting job with some of these teams and what they're rolling out there under center, right? And you look at Cardale Jones, who's playing really well. A.J. Brown's quarterback, Jordan Te'amu, is also playing well. So there are some guys that are definitely showing up.
I don't know what your schedule is. Can you hang through the break? We're getting close to the combine. There's a couple more things if you have time. If you have to bounce, we understand.
Hey, listen, man, it's draft, it's football, you know. Only a couple things I love more than those, and that's religion, you know, God and my family. So I'm with you.
Well said. All right, we will come back and close out the first hour talking with TD, Tron Davenport. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. David Poyle, Predators general manager, will pop in here at 11:15. We'll have our weekly chat with David here. That's coming up in the next hour. Predators and Carolina Hurricanes tonight at Bridgestone Arena. 7 o'clock puck drop. Pre-game at 6. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Tron Davenport is on the line with us. Talking with TD is his podcast. You need to check it out. He does really good stuff. Also on our show all the time. And we will make sure that we're talking with TD throughout the course of this offseason, because there's a lot of big things about to happen, like the combine, the free agency period, and, of course, the draft. And then you guys will also have some Friday night programming.
Sure.
You had it during the year from 6 until 8 o'clock, Chase and Teron as well. He's the NFL Nation reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com. Teron, Dan Shonka, look, the draft is subjective. I get it. It's, you know, it's tough. Everybody's got an opinion one way or the other, and that's all we can do is everybody lend their opinions. Dan seemed to be very high on this wide receiver group. The Titans, we all believe after 1 year, have hit a home run with A.J. Brown in the second round. If indeed he's saying after you get out of the first round, all those first-round receivers go, that later in the draft you can still pick up a good wide receiver in the draft, is that still something the Titans should address, in your opinion?
Yeah, I definitely think it's something they should address. And let me be clear, Dan Shonka and the group there at Arland Scouting, they do an awesome job. So I don't want to, you know, make it seem like I'm trying to degrade anything that they're saying. As far as the receivers, yeah, I think it is something that they can address and they should address. Later than the first round. Now, here's the thing, right? If they're sitting at 29 and a guy like Henry Ruggs III, who was on Talking with TD, you know, if that guy is sitting there, it's very unlikely. But if he is, hey, listen, you got to take him, right? That's that BPA that we talked about, Chase. So
best player
I think
available.
That's a guy, right? You know, and then you look at there are some guys that they could get late. I think they absolutely have to get a guy that could double as a returner, but also line up on the outside and really put fear in the hearts of the opposing defense. And, you know, it's just interesting when you have a guy like a DeSean Jackson, when you have a guy like a Tyreek Hill, defensive coordinators in the beginning of the week, you know, their first meeting, one of the first things they say is, listen, we are not going to let number 10 beat us deep. And if you could get a guy like that, that's going to spark that type of conversation in the beginning of the structure of the defensive plan, I think you're in good shape. And I feel there are guys, you know, whether it's Henry Ruggs, I think Jalen Reagor is another one. KJ Hamler. These are guys that could spark that type of fear. But me personally, I think if Tajae Sharpe moves on, the guy that they really need to target is Antonio Gandy-Golden out of Liberty. Small school kid, but you talk about being able to, you know, win at the line of scrimmage, very fluent within his routes, and then also very strong at the catch point. I think he's a guy that would definitely come in and complement the Corey Davis and A.J. Brown tandem, in addition to moving inside and playing the slot sometimes when you want to go bigger than Adam Humphries.
We saw Kansas City use speed to their advantage. We saw what A.J. Brown, the speed and breakaway skills and the big play-making ability he had in his rookie season. Do you agree with the assessment of Dan Shanka that he just – he said it's one of the strongest wide receiver classes he's seen since he's been doing this for many, many decades. And two, how vitally important is it, in your opinion, for them to get another speed guy, a guy who can really stretch the field?
Yeah, I fully agree with what Dan Shanka said. I mean, you could have a good run for the money, the 14 class, right, with Odell Beckham Jr. and Brandon Cooks and Kelvin Benjamin and Sammy Watson. We could go on and on. There's a bunch of guys from that class. But I think this group is really good because top to bottom, it's basically, you know, pick what you want. You want a speed guy? Okay. You could pick from these five. You want a big guy? Okay. You got Colin Johnson and some of these other guys. Antonio Gandy-Golden, you could pick from that group. You want route runners? Okay, no problem. You have Courtney Davis. You have, Jerry Jeudy. There's an assortment. So I think that's something that's definitely true. And, again, I really feel that they have to address that position because you also have to get into a spot where you're not stuck having to go first round or you know, early in the draft next year to replace a Corey Davis, who I think, I mean, let's face it, right? They're probably not going to pick up the fifth-year option on him. So that means he's going to move on after this year, and he'll be playing for a contract this year. And if he plays really well, he may end up outpricing himself for the Titans anyway. Me personally, I feel as if it would be better for Corey Davis to move on, to be in a different situation. But you have to prepare for that. And that's what good GMs do. So rest assured, I believe that John Robinson and the guys there are looking at the possibilities so that way they're not caught with their pants down in the draft next year. And when you have a group that's so deep like this, you definitely need to address it. Maybe not day one, right? But you could do it day two, you know, second, third round. And for sure, on day three, you could get a guy as well.
Well, guys, we got a piece of breaking news coming out from the NFL. The New Orleans Saints will have Drew Brees under center. He's announced he's coming back. Not that that doesn't really surprise me.
No, but it's just official.
Yeah, so he posted on Instagram that he will be coming back. Teron, before we let you go, the tight end position, they re-signed Anthony Firkser. We don't know what's going to happen with Delanie Walker. Do you think that tight end could be a position of need in the draft?
Yeah, I think it's a position that they could address. You know, good old Sticky Fingers is back, so that's a good thing for the Titans. That's my name for Firkser.
Yep.
But there are a couple guys, and you look at UCLA, right? You got Devin Asiasi. He's a guy who I've seen draw comparisons to Algie Crumpler. He's a 260-pounder, too. He can run that seam route. He does really well on post as well. He works the middle of the field, very sure-handed. I could see them going after a guy like that late. You know, if they want to go a little bit early, like third round, Harrison Bryant out of Florida Atlantic, man, this kid is, you know, he's someone that has drawn George Kittle comparisons, and that's from some of the scouts I talked to down there. And you talk about catch radius, you talk about ability to run any route, and the willingness, the desire to block, it's all there. He's someone that I think could be a really good target. And, you know, Firkser, he's on a one-year deal, right? Jonnu Smith is a guy they're going to have to extend after next year, you know, after this year. So I could see them addressing that position. Draft an effing tight end, right? That's what Delanie Walker said. They may end up doing that this year.
Teron, good stuff as always. Appreciate you checking in, and we will certainly have you on here real soon. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime. Appreciate you, guys.
All right. That is Teron Davenport, ESPN and ESPN.com. TDTV.com is where you can find his work. Also, Talking with TD is his podcast. Really good stuff there, and you can hear him on our show all the time. We'll come back. Hour number two next.